I still feel the eyes sometimes, on my neck, watching me. I still see its face. No, I never mind. I shouldn't start there. The cornfield was first.
Welcome to the Beating Heartland, created by Denver Bauman. Episode 3, The Cornfield.
Yeah, that's the tape I was talking about. Sheesh, you found that quickly. How many of you are back there, anyway? You know, if I could hear noises behind the glass, that would be helpful. It wouldn't feel as secluded in here. Like a zoo animal. Wait, before you play it, I need to explain something that will put the events into a little bit of context. Humor me. Now, I weirdly don't remember much about what happened with this, except for, you know, the big concepts. I must have blocked it from my memory or something. But I do remember the specific feeling of wrongness after. Not of the event itself, but how people responded to it. When you live in the Midwest, more specifically, in a small town in the Midwest, you're part of something unique in this modern age of phones, social media, all that stuff. Look, I'm Gen Z. I'm not about to start bashing all of that, but living here, even to this day, there's something uniquely separate from modern culture. You can't really understand it unless you grew up in a small town. Closed in around you are cornfields, trees as far as the eye can see, occasionally dotted by the site of a farm. That does something to a community. You are all that exists in the world. This small town against everything else. Sure, there are neighboring communities, but those are for football games, to figure out which town is the best, and to brag about how much better yours is. It creates a sort of large family. Family members you love, some you hate, but everyone you know. And more importantly, you know what's happening. You can't go anywhere in a small town without hearing about the latest gossip. Did you hear about Jessica's new tattoo? Did you know that the Johnsons are planning on renovating? And when something big happens, you better believe you'll hear about it for a month. Are you guys hearing that? Never mind. You can play the session now.
Sam was my brother. Not by blood, obviously. Mom had enough trouble raising me. But we were inseparable. It started back early in middle school. We were thrust into a new situation and clung to each other for support. The fear of that first day. We did nearly everything together. Much to the dismay of both our parents. We got in trouble a lot. Sometimes it was harmless, and everyone overreacted a little bit. But other times, well, I'm surprised we're still alive. One time we tried to sneak into an abandoned house on the edge of town. Sam had told me it was about to be torn down, and that Phil had told him that someone told him that they learned from their brother that some guys had hidden some valuable stuff there and forgotten where it was. We barely got out of that house with our limbs still attached. There was a reason it was being torn down. Also, I think homeless people were squatting there, or something. Mom always scolded us when we got into trouble, but she never dreamed of breaking us up. She always said it was normal, and that I needed a friend. Didn't have many growing up. But after the house incident, she got us a Wii, hoping it would keep us inside. Anyway, Sam always had a foot up on me in the dating department. It didn't help that we were both attracted to the same girls and that he was, well, the more obvious choice. While he was a nerd, He was better at being undercover about it. He was more athletic for a preteen. Better hair, better body, better house. I wasn't jealous. Okay, sometimes I was jealous, but honestly, I was just happy being his friend. One day after school, I saw Sam talking with this girl. Jet black hair, great eyes, part of the softball team. He was putting on his moves, and she seemed interested. I waited, didn't want to ruin his plan. She left, he saw me and rushed over. His face said, "I can't believe that worked." He pulled me into one of our secret spots and told me about the plan. "Rachel is totally into me. Or at least she will be if I get this right." I looked at him, a bit confused. He glanced around to make sure no one was in earshot. "I said I could get her weed." "What?" "Shh, it's okay. I know a guy." I don't care if you know a guy, Sam." I should have told him to leave me out of this one. But eventually, my curiosity got the better of me. No matter how crazy his plans were, I always found myself agreeing. We made plans to meet outside town the next day, help him find this lead that he had. Look, I know it was stupid. I knew it then, okay? But he was my best friend, and he seemed to really like this girl. Sometimes, as a kid, you could go to insane levels to impress someone. Also, we had just turned 13, and were trying to find our new place in the order of things. He was trying really hard not to be seen as the nerdy guy. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but he wanted to be cool. And more importantly, a cool teenager. We were both struggling to figure out what that meant. Maybe it meant weed and a girlfriend on the softball team. Sam was determined not to be left behind. He wanted people to notice him. If that meant doing crazy stuff, then so be it. Reluctantly, I helped. Another thing about Sam, he always knew a guy. It was like a superpower. I still don't know how he knew most of them. Again, it was a way for him to stay relevant. We met at the church outside of town, as usual. The pastor was outside working on the flower beds. He waved politely, asked what we were up to. Sam almost blurted out what we were up to immediately. He caught himself and stumbled over his words. Told him we were going fishing. We didn't have poles. Sam said we were trying it with our bare hands. The pastor just smiled. He said, "I hope you pull up something interesting." We said goodbye and rushed off to where Sam's contact was waiting. And unfortunately, Jasmine got there first. Jasmine was a bully. In about as stereotypical a sense as possible. Imposing, broad shoulders, a face that implied she was about to steal your lunch money. She knew her part, and she played it perfectly. Every school in the Midwest needed one. Like some sort of magical code. You weren't a true nerd until you had your face in the toilet or body stuffed into a locker. It sounds like the start of a cheesy coming-of-age film, right? Except in this one, the bully never learns their lesson, and the dweebs never stand up for themselves. She was standing at the edge of Farmer Jeffrey's cornfield, smirking at us. "Look who's late," she said. "What are you doing here?" Sam asked. "Oh, I just overheard some dweeb buckets talk about weed they were going to score." "Yeah, and we were going to talk to someone who can count past 100, Jasmine." Jasmine raised a piece of paper up triumphantly. She smiled, as if she had just killed a mouse, her favorite hobby. "I'm not making her up, I swear."
"Your guy came and went. Looks like he didn't care who paid him. If you have the directions, then why are you still here?"
"Huh, just a gloat.
Also, I need you guys to dig it up for me."
"You seriously think we're gonna do that?"
"Yeah, I do. Especially if I gave you 20% of what's in there."
Sam had done all the talking so far. Whenever Jasmine was around, my tongue would swell. I remember tugging Sam and whispering to him that this wasn't that important. He turned to me, said something like,
"Dude, this is my only shot with Rachel."
I should have said something like,
"Dude, if that's the only chance you have with her, then she doesn't deserve you. Or, you should forget her then."
Instead, I said,
"Okay, fine."
Jasmine held out the paper.
"We got a deal?"
Sam rolled his eyes.
"Fine,"
Sam swiped the paper, and we looked at the cornfield. The drugs were in there. But not only that, something felt different. I couldn't put my finger on it. There was something in there that wasn't supposed to be. Unfortunately, I didn't voice my concern, so we walked in. Don't do that, by the way. It's easy to get turned around, especially with Jasmine hitting the back of our heads whenever she got the chance. I don't know why the drugs were in the middle of a cornfield. I guess it's a secure location, but it had to be hard to find. Thankfully, the directions were very specific. Also, I had a compass on me to keep us on track. There was supposed to be a clearing in the field where the drugs were. There wasn't. Or at least not where we thought the map said it would be. Jasmine was scolding us the entire time. As we continued deeper, I began to feel a strange prickling on the back of my neck. Something was watching us. I knew it. I could feel it. It's the same feeling when you know someone is talking about you. Between the stalks, there was something waiting. Waiting for what? Between the noises of wind and our footsteps, I swore I heard a low rasping. I knew there was something, and it would continue to wait. Jasmine distracted me. "Where's the clearing, butt nuggets?" She was really bad at insults. "It would be a lot easier to find if you could stop talking," Sam yelled. "And don't blame me for being an idiot. Could you be more of a stereotype? It's an art." "Shut up, both of you, okay? Focus on finding the spot so we can just get out of here." That was out of character for me. And shut both of them up. I think they were surprised. I was surprised myself. My skin was just itching all over. It was closer. It was coming for us. It wanted us. We just kept walking and walking, hoping that we just hadn't walked far enough. Nothing. There was no clearing. Thankfully, Jasmine was getting tired and wasn't talking much. Besides her panting, the only sound was the breeze through the stalks and the low rasp. If I'd been alone, I'd have never even entered the field. But Sam was with me, and I just couldn't let him down. Also, I felt like I had to prove myself to Jasmine, to prove her wrong about me being weak. I whispered to Sam about the noises, but he just shrugged and said it was probably nothing. He kept looking over his shoulder, though. Not reassuring. The farther we went in, the clearer it became that we weren't in the right place. I was about to tell Sam we should just head back when suddenly we found ourselves in a clearing. It was small, probably about 20 feet by 20 feet. A couple of bushes seemed to be deeply rooted, so the farmer probably just decided to work around it. Sam was the first to spot the loose dirt. He laughed and put on a big grin. "Told you I had this under control." He ran to it and began digging. Jasmine leaned against some corn, waiting and sweating, glaring at us. I started helping Sam dig, trying as hard as possible to ignore the noises and the itching. We were digging for about 10 minutes. I was worried we weren't going to find it, but then suddenly Sam shouted. I smiled, looked to see what he had found, and quickly realized that it wasn't a happy shout. Where Sam had been digging, there was a hand. I looked up at him, eyes wide. He didn't know what to say. We looked at the hand, reaching out of the dirt. It was blackened and hard, like it was burnt, soot crumbling off the fingertips. Sam started sputtering. "What do we do? Do we call someone?" Jasmine walked over, pushing Sam aside. "What on earth is wrong with you? What is that?" She seemed more angry than surprised. Sam looked at his own hands, noticing blackened soot on them. He gagged and desperately wiped them on the ground, trying to get it off. I looked at the burnt hand, reaching out at us like it wanted help. I don't know why, but I started digging around it. Morbid curiosity, maybe?
or a memory from years ago surfacing. I found more hands and feet and heads, all burnt, barely recognizable. Sam threw up. I sat there, looking at the corpses. They didn't seem human anymore. The charred up faces looked like something you'd see in a movie you watched behind your mom's back. But those always looked fake. These weren't fake. There was a specific brutality to the violence that you just couldn't fake. My brain had a tough time registering them as the faces of people who had been alive. They were afraid. You could see it on their faces. They weren't ready. I looked up at Sam. My vision was blurry. I was crying. He looked at me, face white as a sheet. That's when I saw the eyes behind him. Red, piercing, intense eyes staring through the stalks. I saw the teeth next. Bared, long, and sharp. The corn hid the rest of the body, but the face was long. A mix of canine and human. The face was 7 feet in the air, globs of blackened slobber dripping from the long fangs. Its neck, a mass of muscles tensed and ready to lash out. I froze. All the muscles in my body refusing to accept this new reality. Sam saw the look on my face and slowly looked behind. The moment he registered the sight, he screamed, grabbed me, and ran. Jasmine called out to us, probably making fun of us, she hadn't seen it yet. But then we quickly heard her scream. It was following us. I could hear it. The noise of the corn crunching under its feet. Thunder in my ears. We both ran faster than we thought possible. Fear gives you almost superhuman abilities. It's like every other body function shuts down and focuses on one thing. Survival. Unfortunately, that didn't include my coordination. I tripped. Sam didn't notice. The fear propelled him forward into the corn. I was alone, on the ground, curled in the fetal position, trembling. The sound of crunching stopped. It was above me. I felt its shadow, even though my eyes were shut. Its mouth was right next to my ear as the gurgling breathing continued. I could feel the eyes burrowing into my heart and thoughts. It was searching, looking for something. I could tell it was smiling. It knew I was helpless. I didn't scream. I couldn't. It was going to kill me. Slowly and happily. My mind flashed to the bodies. Buried and burnt. Was that going to be me? Just another body on the pile, forgotten. A meal for something beyond my understanding. Was this thing a part of it? I held my breath, waiting. It was torturing me, enjoying the fear. I felt the first tearing of skin as it sliced a single tooth across my face. There was no pain, only fear. The second streaked across my chest. I lay there, in quiet pain, wishing it was over. Another, across my leg. Blood trickling onto the ground, mixing with the black slobber. Suddenly there was a scream far in the distance behind. A single, drawn-out note of terror. It was Jasmine. It hadn't gotten her yet. It had chosen me instead. The weakest. I felt it shift as it looked around. I heard it sniffing, as if searching for fear. Then, with a sound I can only describe as happy, it ran off into the corn, leaving me. The adrenaline rush was gone. I forced myself to stand up and keep running. I followed the compass, and as I ran, my ears focused on the sounds around me, praying it wouldn't return. I flew out of the cornfield and ran straight into Sam. Our bodies collided and we toppled over. We looked at each other, scared but thankful to be alive. We ran back into town as fast as we could. We didn't talk. We didn't have to. The only time we had experienced something like that together was the first day of school. Huh. I haven't thought about that in forever. We didn't speak except to say goodbye at his house. He mumbled something like, "She's never gonna like me." It's crazy that he could think about that after what had just happened. Probably the only thing he could think about without crying. I collapsed on the couch at home. I was exhausted and terrified, but my mind was racing. For me, to keep from crying, I have to understand. Pick apart every little thing to see how it works. And unfortunately, I've discovered that you can't know everything, no matter how hard you try. Hasn't stopped me, though. Why didn't it kill me? It had every opportunity to, but it didn't. It was almost reveling in my fear, drinking in the ecstasy of my terror. Did it kill the bodies? I don't think so. They were burned. That wasn't its style. Those teeth were for tearing flesh apart, not burn it. It wouldn't just leave behind the corpse for no good reason. So that led to the next question. If it wasn't responsible for the bodies, then why was it there? Did it know about them? Was it, like, guarding them? I don't know. Sam and I notified the police the next day. They weren't much help, but they found the bodies and were eventually able to identify a few. We had talked to the new police chief about it. He hadn't believed us, but he finally agreed to look. I don't remember much about what the police did after that. Jasmine survived, by the way. It took her a few weeks before she returned back to her normal bullying self.
Great memories, guys. I did end up finding the police records for this event, about a year ago. Something in my head told me to find them, reminding me of the documents. The documents and newspapers should be in that box I gave you. If you find them, can you bring them in here, please? It would help jog the memory a bit. Also, can we find the recording of Sam and my first day of school? It sounded important, but I'm not really remembering it. That'd be great. I'm starting to treat you guys like the radio staff. The setup feels normal. You guys on the other side of the glass. Me with the microphone. Except with the radio show, I can actually hear them talking to me through headphones. Which would be nice. Forget it. You know, this is getting fun. More burnt bodies, so it wasn't a singular event with my dad. Which means more clues are knocking around in here. My mind is feeling clearer than it has in ages. Let me know when you...
Sammy, this is you!
Did anyone else hear that?
The Beating Heartland was written and performed by Denver Bauman. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on whatever streaming platform you are using. Follow us online at The Beating Heartland. Thank you for listening.